Hello, and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, today we've got an expert in leadership.
Yeah, I'd love for you to set to introduce her by name, Kevin. Right, so it's
Oh,
now
Graham, that'd be no good because I'm waiting for your introduction for the outtakes reel.
well, it sounds like Zana, but it's Jana Goich
That
Petrosevich.
was close enough, Graham. That
Oh
was
well,
actually great.
okay. Well, but did the name come from Croatia?
Yes, it's a Croatian name. I am Croatian.
You are Croatian, and what a lovely country. Visited
Have
there.
you been to Croatia, by the way?
Only to the coastal bit. I think I was on a cruise thing. I think I
Yes,
popped in.
likewise.
And said hello, and then thought, well, I'm going to get out of here quickly. But no, it's not that. It's a lovely place. But you are a bold leadership. You go around the world telling people how to become a bold leader. Now, you must have had a story that got you to the place that enabled you to do that, all that sort of skill. I've had a look at your qualifications, and the key, honestly, I've been reading them for about 4 hours, and you've got so many qualifications. Tell us what your backstory is and how you got to the place that sort of people listen to you, and they should do, by the way. If you want to find out more, just bang her name into Google, and you're going to get all kinds of brilliant videos and so forth.
Thank you. Thank you, Graham. So we're not going to talk about my qualifications. That reminds me of my dad, who used to say, you'll never finish your schools, right? So he, and actually he was so right. I am a lifelong learner, and I'm probably going to stay a lifelong learner. But how I got to where I am now is I had a corporate career. I like to say that in my past life, I had a corporate career. I was working in an oil and gas industry, and my last position was corporate communications director. And you told me at the very beginning that I'm very bossy. I also know how to obey, and I was obeying for quite long time. And then, there comes a moment when I'm really blunt. And so that moment came, and I was really blunt in front of my chairman, and I finally got myself kicked out
Oh,
of the
wow.
building, of the office. By a security manager. And I know I'm saying this story right now like it's a fun story or a funny story, but it wasn't at the time
Sure,
being.
I'll bet. I'll bet.
Yeah, it was something that really kind of removed the ground beneath my feet. And I kind of stayed in this space of, oh, what do I do now? Who am I now? Like what happens now?
Were you right at that moment? Was he was well, I'm assuming it's a he, but was he, as chairman, in some way abusive of you, or was it about somebody else, or was it about a situation, and you thought, no, I'm going to have my say here? Tell us a little. You don't have to tell us a detail, but tell us enough.
I think there was a lot at play at the time. And if you ask me, would I behave the same way if I go back? I'm not sure, to be completely honest. I'm not sure that I would pick a moment to be blunt. I would have probably spoken my truth long before that moment. But honestly, I don't think the importance of that story is about that person or the organization. Or I just think that was a moment, that moment in life when you feel that somebody has buried you, but you have just actually been planted. So that was bound to be the end of something in my life and the beginning of something else.
It's
So I don't know if
interesting.
I'm going to insult those people or not by saying they're actually really irrelevant. That whole thing was relevant for me in terms of my growth into something completely different.
If you give us our LinkedIn profiles, I'll put that quote there. That person is irrelevant, says Shana from on the Next 100 Days podcast. But just to wind things up. No, we're not going to do that. But the point, what? It's a lovely story because you got yourself out of corporate. Kevin and I have done the similar thing. And Kevin, you were just about to say something.
Yeah, I was just saying that the number of times we've talked about this on the podcast, that point that you get to the end of corporate.
that moment that says, right, that's it. And the number of times we've had this discussion, and it probably wasn't necessarily a planned exit.
No, absolutely not. That was not a planned
I
exit.
remember a lady called Julie that we interviewed, gosh, it must be 3 or 4 years ago now, and she was there at 2 o'clock in the morning doing this job that, well, she liked, but it was kind of, nope, this pressure is too much. That's it. I'm quitting. Similar sort of thing. You get to that situation, but how you piece together the next 100 days after that, that's the interesting part.
Oh my God. Well, the next 100 is like actual 100 days. I think I was just coming to my senses and trying to understand what happened to me. And I'm not sure I was successful at that. It actually took me years. It took me about 3 to 4 years to understand I'm not going to get my corporate life back, and I need something else, but I don't know what that is. And I need some help, some guidance to just clarify, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, being a very ambitious, driven person, fulfilled through my work. But what is this work now? What do I do? Who am I becoming? I just didn't know the answers to all of these questions. And it took me a couple of years to kind of, I would love to say flirt with those questions, but that wasn't comfortable at all.
No, you're sitting there thinking, oh, the corporate job's gone, the salary that goes with it's gone. What am I going to replace this with? This is starting to become a bit uncomfortable. So you don't like to flirt with that question, do you?
No. And you know, when you put it that way, you think, yeah, the job's gone, the salary's gone. But you know what the key thing here is? Your identity is gone. That's the thing. I don't know who I am any longer. And I do remember on very practical terms that obviously I was applying for other jobs. And it's not easy when you're in a small country and you've ended a corporate career that way. You are a little bit or a lot labeled in a way. But then at a certain point, I started to apply for kind of lower level jobs. And somebody told me, you know, you've got what it takes, but we're wondering why are you applying for a lower level job? And that was the moment when I realized this is never going to work. I'm never going to get that career back. I'm not obviously allowed to start from the very beginning. So this is no longer my playground. I need to go somewhere else.
Wow, that's a, do you know what, Kevin? That's one of the best explanations of the leap from corporate into where we all are doing things on our own or in different businesses. But you have you've eked out this thing about leadership. So you've kind of got experience of people leading you, and the bit right at the end, probably not the, but at least it was evidence. So you were able to eke out this new career, patching together. Now you talked about being a communications sort of expert. You talked about, and we know that you're offering leaders advice. I've seen you on video, and I think you're brilliant. I really do. You've got a framework which is called the Soul Framework. So, oh, I love soul music. I don't know about you, but I love it. But you've really developed your offer to the market as a speaker, but also as somebody who can come in and I don't know. I want to say elevate, but you think I've been listening to ChatGPT too much. But at the end of the day, you're going to elevate somebody's skill set. So all of that came together. Was that just the reading, as Kevin was saying, during that 100 days or the next period? Was it just, I don't know, what made you think that you were going to be good at helping others when it comes to leadership?
Obviously, it's not something that came overnight, unless you think that the night lasts for a couple of years, obviously. But I do remember when it started, right? And it was a couple of years after that whole episode when I thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to treat myself to a weekend in London, and I should find some coaching school or something like that, something to give me a little bit of clarity on what to do with my life from this moment on. And I found this Coactive Coaching, and that was it. I found something else which I was more drawn to, but obviously they had courses like 6 months from that moment, and I needed them yesterday and not 6 months from that moment. And I said, no, I'm going to go for this Coactive Coaching. It looks a little bit fluffy, but let me go there. And I'm a big believer that conversations can change your life, Right. And that, you know, there's a conversation you're having with yourself which can, that can change, completely change your life. There's a conversation that you're having with other people that can change your life. And when I got into that training during those 2.5 days, I remember it clearly, it was in 2016, I've experienced a conversation that I've never experienced before in my life. And it was a conversation that made me feel seen, heard. I was able to express myself. Suddenly, my energy was not too much. Suddenly, my ways of communicating were not blunt. Suddenly, this was truth, authenticity, courage, boldness, you name it. And I thought, this is what I want to do. I've come here to understand what is it that I want to do, but this is what I want to do. I want to bring these conversations into all those spaces that matter to me. And that was the organization. Organizations matter to me because when you think about people who work in organizations, they spend most of their days there. These organizations shape the world. Can we have different conversations there? And then we'll have different people working there. So that was the beginning. And then me being an intensive learner, as you could have seen in my CV, I went immediately, what else is there? You know? Being a corporate person, I knew if I bring this a little bit fluffy conversation into the corporate world, they would just say, who's this woman? Like, what are you talking about? So I need something with numbers. And that's how I started with psychometric tests and, you know, and one thing led to another. And that's how I started to build my identity into something completely different and new.
Okay, I get the coaching school. I get the picking up on the idea. I get how you can become passionate in it. I get how you can learn about it. But how did you go about turning that sudden newfound passion into an actual business? Where did the first client come from?
Oh, well, I've got an answer to that question. How do you check? You know, sometimes it's really easy to turn your new passion into a business when you are unemployed. And there's no perspective for you to find the job that you might be dreaming of, right? So, you know, starting from zero or below zero, you are as bold as you can be because there's nothing to lose, right? But the second thing to answer, how did I get my first client? I started doing something I was never doing while I was in corporate. I was a hardworking person. I wasn't the kind of person that used to network a lot. And now I realize, whoa, wait a second. Now I need to network. I need to go out there, connect with people, offer these conversations for free if it takes, build relationships. That's how the business is going to come in. So again, it was almost like a new character being developed in me to be able to first survive in full honesty and then later on thrive in this new playground.
That was 10 years ago.
That was 10 years ago.
And so you've come some way in that in those 10 years. So Kevin mentioned your early clients or one of your first clients. But when you kind of walk through the door, what kind of problems did you help solve for them?
So at the very beginning, it was literally anything that a coaching client can come to you for. And that could be from something very simplistic, oh, I'm overwhelmed, I don't know how to manage my time, you know, to this is getting overly complex. You know, the skills that I used to use before, they don't work any longer, in this new position. And through time, I realized I'm not that kind of a coach that wants to tell you how you're going to manage your time. I'm not sure I'm a champion of that myself, but I love the bit of mental coaching. I want to see what's your inner world. What are those beliefs that are preventing you from achieving what you really want to achieve? What are the fears that are stopping you? Like, what's that tension inside of you between what makes you feel safe and what makes you feel alive? Let's go and explore that territory. So that's what I started helping leaders with, and there are a number of leaders just struggling with this tension of, I want to stay here because it makes me feel safe and I don't like any of this. If I could really choose, I would be doing something else, or I would just be changing my approach in this organization in which I am.
I saw a copy. I saw an episode of The Office, the American Office, and they were trying to recruit for the guy who'd left for a bit, and one guy, I don't, the words were along the lines of, It's almost like he doesn't really want to get this job because he'll have it for another 25 years and he'll die in the office. And
It'll be miserable.
that kind of like, I'm so glad that I don't work for someone else other than, you know, the guy that I look in the mirror for every day. So basically, the idea of spending all that time trying to make money for somebody else or trying to, you know, yeah, I'll have it has its benefits in some ways because there's kind of regular money coming in and all the rest of that, and the challenges change and there's the progression that you might get or not. And you just think, but there's a sadness that says, if I'm in for the long haul, somebody else said that you, in terms of being remembered after that length of time, it's a bit like throwing a pebble into a drum with water in. And when the waves flatten
The
out,
ripples,
when the ripples flatten out, they've forgotten you. So the thing, you go in there and help people who might have that office kind of thought process in their head. How is it that you get them pumped up so that they're feeling the best version of themselves?
Well, there are different ways, but one of those ways could be to help them to reconnect to their passion. You know, what got them there in the first place, right? And kind of what was lost along the way? And was it really lost in their outside environment, or was that something that's lost inside of them because they've started to believe their own thoughts around what you can or cannot do in an organization and, you know, where you're putting yourself at risk? I love this question, what's worth the risk? I think we need to know the answer to that question, no matter whether we work for the organization or whether we're running our own business. So what is that bold idea that you have, or a dream that you have, or a vision that you have? And what's worth risking for that? If we don't know as human beings what's worth the risk, we'll probably never take that risk because we love comfort. That's normal, right? Who likes to risk? Have you ever found the person who said, "Oh, I love this uncertainty. Oh, I love to feel unsafe." No one. So unless we know what's worth that risk, unless that passion is bigger than that fear, we're not going to move. So what I'm trying to do with these leaders, I'm trying to reconnect them to their passion so it becomes bigger than their fear, so they
Yeah, but you,
move.
one of the things I heard you on one of your videos, you said something along the lines of, no, if you don't accept change, I know it's I'm misquoting you, but if you don't accept change, then you're going to be a perfect person for a career, a time that's gone. So in other words, you're not, I'm misquoting you, but basically what I'm trying to get at is that you're going to find legions of Peter Principle directors and senior people. They've gone beyond maybe where they should be, or they've got an element of Peter Principle in there. They've found that they're incompetent, but maybe they're not. They just haven't been guided to that competency that they really need. So I can understand why your leadership skills, you know, finding their passion, getting that out of them would work.
And I love what you're mentioning now here, because when we speak about that competence, there's an outer game of leadership and there's an inner game of leadership. And usually when we think about that competence, we think about the outer game of leadership. Do I have enough of, and I'm going to call it technical knowledge. Do I have enough of technical knowledge, or should I upgrade my skills? But these are more like technical skills, right? Imagine like you're putting the tools into your toolbox. But that's not what we do with real leadership development, or at least not what we should be doing. We should be expanding the actual toolbox, the size of it. So you should be expanding the consciousness of these people to still be in the same environment with the same skills. I'm not saying the skills are not important, right? But with the same skills, or you know, that's irrelevant, but in a way that they start looking at things in a different way, that they suddenly get additional definitions of some of the things. If you take leaders today and you just have a conversation with them, how is it that they define success? Are there any other definitions of success than those ones they've been telling themselves for years? Just that will create change, right? So changing our own definitions, expanding our consciousness, starting to see things in a different, broader way is something that will bring change. And by the way, when you get to that place, you'll be more able to embrace any change in the external world, right? Anything new that the organization is imposing on you or is asking you to embrace, you need to accept that change in your inner world first before being able to be very eager to embrace it out there. Does it make sense to you what I'm saying right now?
It took me back to working for an American company. I won't mention which, but basically, and they have a particular, I don't know, style. And it's quite aggressive on the sales marketing side. So basically, it was quite aggressive and not always likable. In fact, rarely likable. But for me, if you put yourself into a position where you were either a change agent yourself, so you were leading change, damn sight easier to take it, or you recognize the upside of any change, because a change is just, well, something different's going to work, and there're going to be winners and losers. So figure out how to become a winner. So is there something in that thinking that you impart with others, that the change, you don't have to worry about it, you just have to figure out where the upside is for you?
Yeah, exactly. One of my key messages is how to see change as a chance, as an opportunity, as a possibility, rather than seeing change as a threat, as a risk, right? Yeah. Because obviously when we look at it as a risk, we're going to become defensive. We're going to be thinking about, what am I losing? What is it that I have today and I'm losing it because of that change? Instead of thinking, what is it that I could be getting? What is it that I could be creating? What's the possibility here?
Yeah.
Because let's face it, we will not stop the change.
No,
you know? Change is here to stay.
Yeah.
It's here to stay. And no matter how the organization of people today will speak about the change fatigue, the organizations will give them a training or two to take care of their mental health, but we're not going to stop change. It's not going to stop. And besides, everything is change. Like, if you use a very simplistic, almost stupid example, can you say as a human being, oh, I'm going to continue crawling, I'm not going to start walking, I'm not liking that change? Change is growth.
I've got a granddaughter who's kind of in that area right now, but we're working on that. But, you know, I'm bright enough, just not doing the things we want her to do. So basically it's, I get that. And that's probably true for older people as well. Do you find, when it comes to the C-suite, that the kinds of people that you have most, resonance with, are more creative, or they're more like Kevin? As in, you know, sorry, Kevin. But, you
know, insulting Kevin. Finance people again, Graham.
Sorry, can't help it. It's second nature. But I just wondered whether or not you would naturally, as a communicator, relate to the sort of right brain rather than the left?
I wouldn't say that. I would say, I love working with all the people, obviously, and people have got different ways of approaching things and they have different thought processes and everything. If you ask me who I relate most with, it would be with people who are eventually ready to see the possibility rather than consider themselves as victims of circumstances. You know, if I had to categorize them in any way, then I would say, well, those would be my people who would eventually see possibility. That doesn't mean they need to jump on it immediately or be all, falsely positive. But essentially, in this whole coaching process, they stop thinking, I am a victim to the circumstances, this whole thing is happening to me. And they start, realizing, I feel this sense of agency. I can actually do things. I've got a choice.
Sorry, Kevin.
Yeah. So out of this, Sana, have come more than one book.
Yes, two.
Tell me a little bit about why you then got into writing about this.
First of all, I love writing. That's one of the ways how I like to express myself. And I had this dream always, I'm gonna write a book. But I always thought, oh God, you need to be so mature and wise and, not to say old to go and write a book, right? What do I have to offer? And then I realized in this business, in full honesty, the way it works with business books, it's another business card that you have. So it's another place where you can put your own ideas, frame them into certain concepts or frameworks, and make it easier for those people who would eventually follow you or buy your services to actually understand what is it that this woman is doing, right?
You have the soul framework. You talk about frameworks. So you talk, the
Yes.
soul framework, which is self, other, universe, legacy. Now, give me half an hour and I can come up with another one of those frameworks. But there must be
No,
some
you
logic
couldn't,
to it.
Graham. You'd ask
I'm sure he could.
ChatGPT.
I am sure he could.
I wouldn't ask ChatGPT, but maybe Claude. But anyway, tell us a little bit about soul.
So I understand that as almost like four playgrounds. Obviously, I love the word playground. Four playgrounds that you have to know, and you have to know how to play the game on those four playgrounds as a leader. The first one is self, because you need to know how to lead yourself, right? And when we say that, it may sound poetic, like, what does that mean? But that actually means knowing yourself, knowing your limiting beliefs, knowing your values, knowing what you stand for, knowing some of the patterns that are essential part of your inner operating system, and how is that supporting you or not supporting you, right?
Now, I'm out of corporate on that one alone. I'm not going to survive that playground. I have too many limits.
That is the most difficult playground, by the way.
I
That is
can
the most
imagine,
difficult one.
I can imagine now. Sorry, I interrupt. But so you're in now. You've got that S. So that's that playground, that quarter of the football. What's the next one?
So once you confront yourself and you kind of start feeling, well, I can lead myself, you actually realize, well, leadership doesn't happen in isolation, right? I'm surrounded by other people. So here comes another layer of complexity. How do I lead others or with others? How can I be in this relationship, right? Because it comes down to relationships, work relationships. Either we collaborate or we don't collaborate. Either there's an increased complexity there, or things are smooth. So that's another bit. One thing that I like there, and that might come from my kind of bluntness, is that as a coach, we're not just being very gentle to people, we're being very kind, which means we're also being very honest. And that's what leaders should do as well. Be very honest at moments of the hard, loving truth for the sake of helping other people grow, right? So that's part of the other
Very good.
kind of playground, right?
Yeah.
After that, we're realizing, oh, oops, we're in a whole system, right? And not just one. So this is not just between me and you. How do I relate to you? How do I relate to Kevin? How do I relate to somebody else that I might be leading? But how do we exist in this entire system, right? What's the culture here? How do we speak up? How do we bring courageous conversations? How do we shape the system,
Does that
right?
include, if it's a university, does that include clients?
It could include clients if you think of a system like the organization and its clients. It could be the organization and the community. It can just be the organizations and all the teams within the organizations, right?
I understand.
So just it can be a family. A family is a system,
Yeah,
right?
makes sense.
Yeah,
And
and
then
not always a functional one.
the last quarter is legacy.
Legacy.
Yeah, legacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all of this drives the last quarter. Is that the point?
Yes. Yeah, that's the
Okay.
point. You can,
All right. So tell us about legacy then, because presumably, Kevin's probably got quite a little, well, he has. He's done all kinds of things in his career, and apart from that period when he was in Pentonville, but beyond that, he's done really well, haven't you, Kevin?
And I smile when I hear the word legacy. It reminds me of my days of working for London 2012,
There you
the
go.
legacy team. What are we going to leave behind?
Yeah,
And
but
if
the
you ever
West Ham
watched the
fans hate you
BBC
for it.
comedy series that was put together around 2012, they must have had an inside person in the game, in the team that were putting the games together.
Yeah, well, sorry, sorry, but legacy. You've looked at the self. You've looked at the way in which you relate to others. You've looked at the systems and the sort of the way the organization maybe works, processes and so forth, which leaves a legacy. That's the other three look pretty hard. The legacy seems a bit soft. How do you measure it?
I don't, yeah, I with the legacy, we come back to that leader asking, what stays when you go, right? In this whole field. And that can connect you back to what's worth the risk. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you here in the first place? That's the question that I like to ask from a stage when I'm delivering a keynote. Like, why are you here? I mean, here in this keynote. Why are you here in this organization? Why? Right? Before I even ask the question, why do leaders exist? Why do we need them? Right? But why would we need you? Or you can have different types of questions there that are all linked to legacy. What is your competitive advantage? And then they think, oh, you mean the competitive advantage of our organization? No, no, no. I mean you. Why are you in that seat and not someone else? Because in case you didn't know, there are 100 other candidates that would love to sit in that seat, but why you and not someone else? So what is it that you're creating that's going to stay there after you and that's going to make a difference so that we could say, oh, it's good that it's you and so, not someone else?
So is it, Kevin and I are big football fans, but is it akin to almost like, you know, the last few seasons? So the guy's done all of this, or the girl's done all of this, all the other three quadrants, the self, the other, the universe. There's something I like about this, but the legacy feels it's a bit like it's your results over the last period. It's the things that you've done that you can look back, because to answer your question is, because I've won, you know, 35 out of 50 games, my batting average is pretty good. Or is that not the answer?
Well, if we want to think in terms of measurement, yes, we can measure that. But legacy can be something that it's not directly measurable. So it's like, you know, if I leave today and you ask people who are surrounded by me today, what was it like to have her around? And they might say, oh, you know, the energy that was there, the way that she was able to empower us, oh, that's a legacy. That stays, right? And maybe, you know, the bottom line wasn't as brilliant as it could have been, right? So legacy here is really, are you aware enough to understand that as a leader, you are creating something from day one? That every decision that you take, and you take millions of decisions a day, and some of these decisions take really quick, almost unconsciously, they have an impact on other people. And maybe the kind of impact that you'll never be aware of. Are you aware of that? Because we create legacy with everything, with what we actually create, produce, generate, deliver, and also with how we treat other people, how we connect with other people. Also, how we connect with ourselves. If you take leaders who are not connected to themselves, to their passion, can you really expect that they're going to leave legacy? I don't think so.
I do like that. I had a brilliant colleague for an organization. He's working for God now, unfortunately. But basically, he said of me, he said, Graham photocopies his best ideas. Now, I had a lot more about me than nicking other people's ideas. Maybe what I was doing was creating things. And I wasn't above seeing the creation in other people's.
Yeah. But, you know, Graham, there's very little new under the sun.
Well,
that I don't have a problem with photocopying other people's ideas, because if you take an idea from person A and another idea from person B and put them together.
Yeah.
You've got something.
That's a new idea.
It's a new idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, Andy was brilliant. When he passed when he was young as well. So it's really, really, really upsetting. But that, nonetheless, for me, the legacy of that period were the friendships, the development of people, the way in which, you know, success came to the organization in little bits that we were involved in. You couldn't take credit for something, somebody who was down in London or whatever else. We were in the north. So it's that kind of thing. So it's not necessarily corporate wide, but it might be, I don't know, bubble wide.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of that legacy that gets left behind is, in a way, culture.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
What you're describing, you know, that all goes together to build the sort of place that we work in.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And if you think about that, culture can block or unlock things.
Yes.
So it's super important. What kind of culture you're creating? There's something that I've learned a long time ago. Leaders bring the weather, right? Leaders bring the weather. They either bring sunshine or they bring storm or they bring, and in organizations, but outside of organizations or wherever they go, they, with that weather, they're kind of communicating what's possible, what's not possible here, right? They're going to empower people, or they're going to leave everyone depressed and kind of thinking, oh, this is not going to work. Or so they bring the weather. The weather that you bring is also your legacy.
The blouse that you're wearing, it seems, it just looks like you would have picked it because it says something about you. Now, of course you would, you know, anybody would, anyway. And it says to me that you're very stylish. You said one of the things right at the beginning to do with their, they kind of bring themselves. It's the way in which they look, the way in which they present, etc. You present really, really well. And again, on the videos, you looked immaculate. So your thing is that you kind of walk into that environment looking the part. You have to look as if you're in the C-suite and you deserve to be there. Of course you would, but you know, all they have to do is look at your qualifications and most of them probably won't have a fraction of the qualifications that you've got. But the point is, you walk in and you have that appeal, that in looking at thing, God, she's done well. And I think that blouse says, you've done well.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to say one thing to what you've just said is the first story you need to believe in is your own story. If you don't believe in your own story, no one else will, or at least they won't believe in it long term. You have to believe in your own story. You have to, it's the Amy Cuddy thing. You have not fake it until you make it, but fake it until you become it. You have to believe that's who you are before every cell in your body is really convinced that that's who you are. To tell you a little story, I remember it was in 2021 when there was a big organization. God, if they're listening, they're probably going to recognize themselves. They invited me to have a big keynote in front of 200 people. They said, we love your website. It's all about boldness. That's what we need. I mean, that's what you do, right? You do keynotes. And I went like, yes, that's what I do. I've never done a keynote before that. That was the first, and I smashed it. It was wonderful. I enjoyed in that conversation because I believed I can do it. I feel that passion.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, the key moment was just to say, yes, that's what I do. I, at least in my vision, that is exactly what I do.
We've identified that you're a bit of a liar, really, aren't you? You're terrible. You're bossy. You're a bit of a liar.
Well, they kept hiring me since then, so I must be doing something right.
No, you're definitely doing something right.
The keynote speaker that's never done a keynote before. Coach that's never done any coaching before. Yeah. We get the picture here.
it's so true, isn't it? You've got to look like and feel like you can do this and say no. That's for losers, isn't it? Let's face it.
And to be completely honest, you have to put hard work behind that, right? So obviously I'm not advocating for saying, yes, that's who I am, that's what I can do, and then not putting hard work behind it. But I'm saying you don't, if that's your vision and you're ready to put hard work, you also need to take some risks and take that leap before you feel absolutely ready. Because that's the whole point.
Are you what's the right word? Enthusiastic about the future, given that we've now got this AI in our midst. And I had a great example. I have she's watching, she's in her mid-50s as an intern, and she came, and she's Muslim, so she's not eating today and all that kind of. The point is, she produced some amazing work today. Now I know how it happened, you know, and she was using, but I literally, before we recorded an earlier podcast, I just said, can you do this in the, and an hour or so later, she presents this amazing range of options. I said, I'm not sure about us doing this, but I want you to think about things what we could do, which have less risk. And I was just knocked out. And I know that she got some help, but you have to have an adroit mind to get the right help. And I just think that's, it makes me really positive about their future. And you know, for me, that leaves me very positive. Does it you?
I am by nature, I'm positive about future. I have, do I like all of the things? Do I sometimes like how I see things developing? No, but I'm a firm believer that, people have got this instinct to survive and then eventually to get connected with that humanity inside of them. And this whole future thing now with the technology and AI and everything is also a way for us to really understand what is it that we want to keep agency over, right? And what is it that we want to use as a support system? Again, it puts us in a position to be very conscious about the choices that we're making. And if we can be very conscious about the choices that we're making, I think that we can just see possibilities and opportunities for sure.
I couldn't agree more. We honestly, I could, and I know that Kevin could talk to you for the rest of the evening. But Jana, more or less, right?
Thank you. That was perfect.
Kevin, you're listening now. Jana,
Yeah.
yeah, all right, okay, I'll do it now. But you've been an
I've still
absolute.
got the bit for the outtakes reel.
Yeah, I know you have. You've been an absolutely brilliant guest on the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank
Thank you.
you. Thank you so much. You've been brilliant hosts. Thank you.
Fantastic corporate escape story.
One of the best, honestly. I love the idea of, you could almost have a little film of it, couldn't you? Where the arguments ensued, and you want to know why exactly, but we didn't quite get into that. But the fact that triggered a fair few years to sort of re-engineer herself, and that is interesting, because it might not be done in 100 days, Kevin.
No, but I'm a firm believer in things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
And she's very definitely got to the place that she needed to get to.
Well, yeah, because the world's better off for what she's doing now,
Yeah.
and that her level of skill. And I promise you, if you get a chance to watch some of her speeches, then do, because she's very good at that. But also, she's make some really, really keen points. But I mean,
Yeah.
we covered a lot. I do like the soul framework. Less
Yeah.
completely convinced about legacy, but it's getting there. And the other three things seem more tangible in some way. Natural,
Yeah,
obviously.
I get the legacy bit, but the other three definitely tangible, and they're applicable to whether you're running your own business or you're still in big corporate. They're just as
Yeah, they
applicable.
are.
But
Yeah,
hey,
they are.
Graham. You are trying to leave a legacy. You're
Well,
finally fettled, who used to be just Graham Arrowsmith. You're
yeah.
finally fettled now that employs somebody and has got an intern today.
Yeah. Well, it's and in our own little way, we're being found for the things that we do. But we're not IBM. We're not big. We'd like to be, but I'm very, very hopeful for the future. I really am. I think there's some things that we're involved in that, and I mentioned this to you earlier, but basically to do with the way in which AI is evolving to make it so easy for executives in Jana's purview, to make it easier for them to be technically adroit. So in other words, they can just say what they want. Well, I really want an answer to this kind of problem, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do that. And then we go away and just build it. There is no detailed programming like it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, literally 2 or 3 weeks ago. Now it just goes away and builds it. It's scary. It really is scary, but in a good way. But it's moving to a place where we think of it as zero learning curve.
But that comes back to legacy, as I said. Legacy is having built something that's got some kind of lasting value. You haven't just done a bit of admin at your desk. You've
No.
built something that still exists tomorrow.
Yeah.
And
Well, I mean, you're doing the
kind of
same
in the
with.
world of sort of ex-corporate folk that have done consultancy and so on, part of that legacy is the book you've written. Part of that legacy is for us.
But you've
Five
got to
hundred
do that book.
podcasts.
We have a book in a sense.
Yeah, we have in a sense, right?
Five
Our
hundred.
legacy together and giving is the giving back.
Yeah. I mean, but also
Getting on for 550 episodes of this podcast.
Jana felt comfortable talking about some of her things. And she said every now and again, a bit deep, but maybe digestible, because we're not the Financial Times. We're more like the Mail or the Express or something like that. Readable. It might not necessarily be that deep all the time, but it's digestible. And if it can communicate ideas in the way in which we have structured this podcast, then I think we're doing the world a favor, because there's too much boring in life, and frankly, we don't need to be. And the thing is, I think we can do more of the same. But yeah, with 500 plus hours of this show from the last whatever 10 years, we've got more than a few books. I have thought
Indeed.
about taking it, Kevin, and writing a few. Just and we here are our 20 books, but well, we'll see. We'll see.
AI, here's 500 episodes of the next 100 Days podcast. Go
Yeah.
write some books.
Yeah, well, it's gonna happen. But on that bombshell, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.